South Florida and the world. Orders at 896 fresh or online at fieldofflowers.com. The time is 6 minutes past one.
Chapman Partnership provides more than just food and shelter for the homeless. They are committed to making the homeless whole again. From treatment for medical, dental, and mental health issues to vocational training to child care and housing placement, Chapman Partnership guides the homeless from hopelessness to self-sufficiency, having served over 90,000 people with a success rate upwards of 62%. You can help the homeless with your support for Chapman Partnership. Details at 877-548-6369 or chapmanpartnership.org.
And welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Formed in 2008 by a group of like-minded local business people, the Upper Keys Business Group came together with the hope of increasing tourism in their area. Their goal led them to produce several exciting, unique events featuring local flavor and appeal. After 5 years of success, their signature culinary event, Uncorked, the Key Largo and Isla Mirada Food and Wine Festival, now stretches out to a 10-day event starting Thursday, January 10th and running through Saturday, January 19th. And with us today, with all of the exciting details, is restaurateur Bobby Stokey. Great to have you back with us, Bobby.
Hey, Ed, it's great to be back. I'm super excited about this year's event.
I got to tell you, you bring us a lot of excitement in an expanded festival this year. But let's go back just a bit. Tell me how the Upper Keys Business Group is doing these days, and is tourism increasing in the Upper Keys?
We're doing great. I mean, obviously, the business group was formed at a time when the economy, we really needed help in the Keys for the mm-hmm. economy. And we wanted to make sure we kept the Keys really unique, especially the Upper Keys, and to differentiate ourselves. We didn't want to become a bedroom community for Miami. Nothing wrong mm-hmm. with Miami, but obviously we're the Keys, and we wanted to remain the Keys. And we created the events, and we created Uncorked, the event you're talking about right now. We also have the Key Largo Pirates Fest, which happens in October, and we have Conquer Public Days, one of the most infamous days in the Florida Keys.
Ah, well, we were talking about the Pirate Fest, and that's in, what, mid-October, you said again?
Mid-October, yeah. Runs in
great
mid-October.
Great fun.
Great fun, and celebrates the life of Black Caesar, Key Largo's pirate.
Mm.
And it's a really great event. It's super fun, and there's tons of stuff. And we have pirate reenactments, and we had three galleons on the bay this year, all in Blackwater Sound. Really cool to see.
And a lot of costumed attendees, no doubt.
A lot of costumed attendees. A lot of pirates. Some come from out of town, and we have some in-town pirates, as you can imagine, as well.
Now, the Uncorked Key Largo and Isla Mirada Food and Wine Festival now moves to January. Why the move?
We moved it to January. It used to be the last weekend in July, and mm-hmm. started last weekend in July. I moved to January just for the cooler weather.
Mm.
It is a great event, but we wanted to make sure that people could enjoy their red wine without it being so warm.
Without having to dab the sweat. Now, let's talk about the events. 10 days of magnificent events. You have some new events going on this year. You've got an organic offering on Thursday the 17th. You're bringing back one of my favorite blues musicians on Saturday the 12th. But let's start with Thursday the 10th.
Yeah, Thursday, January the 10th is our cook-off. And I think on this day, there's basically the way the festival's set up is there are typically about four events per day.
Mm-hmm.
Two of them are in Key Largo and two of them are in Isla Mirada. And as you know, from here, from Miami, we're just a little bit north of the airport, or a little bit north of downtown. So it's about an hour and 15 minutes, Key Largo, an hour and a half to Isla Mirada.
Take the turnpike,
drive straight down there. But it's fast and easy to get there.
Yeah.
But we have two events per day, two in the Upper Key, two in Key Largo, two in Isla Mirada. And Key Largo Fisheries is back with their Lobster Fest, their Backyard Cafe Lobster Fest. And Key Largo Fisheries opened a restaurant about 2 years ago now, and it's right on the marina. It's at mile marker 100, and it's phenomenal. You eat this lobster. It can't get any fresher than this because it's coming right there from the fisheries.
And we're talking Florida lobster.
Florida lobster.
Sorry, Boston.
Exactly. And you're eating them, and you're eating these lobsters, and there's lobster traps there, and there's fishermen coming and going, and it is a great, great time.
What a magnificent atmosphere.
So, and then from there, that's in Key Largo. And then in Almirada, they have from the dock to the plate at Island Grill. I think what makes this event really unique and really a lot of fun is that they're featuring hogfish. And hogfish is this white, light, flaky fish, and it's phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that makes that event a lot of fun.
Tell us a little lore about the hogfish. Somebody threw it out of their aquarium one day, and they exploded, and now they've overtaken the Caribbean, and they're dangerous if you try to grab them.
Well, those are lionfish.
Oh, those are lionfish.
That's okay, though.
I'm sorry.
There are restaurants down there that are serving lionfish as well, and they are getting served all up. In fact, we have a couple restaurants on the list, and I would be not surprised if they added lionfish to their menus because lionfish, as you know right now, just as you mentioned, it is it's great if we can pull them off the reefs because they have no local predators.
Mm-hmm.
And B, it is a great fillet as well, super light. And it reminds people, and this is why you got confused, it reminds people of hogfish because the fillets are so delicate and so are so white and translucent almost when they're caught. And then when they're cooked, it's a great fish as well.
Hogfish snapper for me and my limited palate is one of the tastiest fish, and to get them live down here, to get them fresh out of the water down here, you can't have better eating. Now, Friday the 11th, where do we go?
Friday the 11th, Island Time Paddle Wheel Riverboat. This is the riverboat.
Key Largo has a riverboat.
Key Largo has a riverboat. It's a new addition to the Keys. It's been there for a little over a year now, or coming right up on a year, and these guys do a great job, but it is a full-fledged riverboat. It is multi-level. They have an open deck out on the top. You can go sit outside. They usually have a musician up there. They have multiple bars. A lot of fun. And they're doing a Caribbean night at sea. The other thing is they're moving right now. I'm really excited for this because they are moving right next door to their Caribbean club. So we'll be able to see them from Sundowners, from the water at Sundowners. I can look over, which is the restaurant where I work at usually.
Mm-hmm.
And I can look over and see them. And it's super neat to see them out on Blackwater Sound riding around. So that's going to be great. So that's on Friday the 11th.
And don't forget the conch blowing contest.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So.
Now, Saturday the 12th, you bring in my favorite North Florida blues man, Bill the Sauce Boss Wharton, back down to Key Largo for a night in New Orleans at your restaurant.
Yep, he has done this for the past 3 years. I think this will be his fourth time down. And it is super fun. He does an amazing job. If you've never seen one of his shows, you can't even describe it.
Mm-hmm.
The guy is playing. He's a bona fide musician. He's great at what he does. And then on top of that, he's making gumbo at the same time.
And it's a darn good gumbo.
It's a good gumbo as well. So it's a really interesting thing. I think it's one of the highlights of Food and Wine. Because it takes two cultural aspects and puts them together, both the musician aspect of it and great food.
This will be out on the bayside at your Sundowners, which is a lovely location right out there on the bay.
Right. Yeah. No. It's beautiful, and so that's really cool.
Sunday the 13th, what's up?
Sunday the 13th, I think we have two really cool events on this. I mean, I think all the events are cool, but I think we have two really cool events. And one of them is Snappers. Snappers, they have an amazing brunch on Sundays, and they always bring in great entertainers. And they're again doing a sort of a food and music thing, and they are having a jazz brunch on Sunday. And so that's fun. And then the other event that I'm really excited about, because I get to be one of the judges for it, is we are having a celebrity chop down at Marker 88. And this is like kind of works like the TV show, but a little bit different.
People love that TV show.
It is to raise money for charities, so that's kind of cool. And what we have done is we have gone around town and we have picked local celebrities, not celebrity chefs, local celebrities. And so we have two from Key Largo and two from Almirada. So it's sort of a Key Largo versus Almirada deal. And we have Dr. Bellini and Christy Allen are both from Key Largo. And we have Patty Stanley and Captain Skip Radine. Not a lot of people know Captain Skip Radine, but he is a famous fisherman out of Almirada. I'm joking. I'm saying it in jest about that. Not a lot of people. He has won the best of the Keys for fishing captains for, I think, ever since the contest has been going on. But he is a local character. All these guys are local characters. And girls. So what they're going to do is they're going to cook food for us with, of course, like a secret ingredient. And so we had talked before about like the secret ingredient could be yellowtail snapper with, I'm not saying this is what it is because I don't know yet, but it could be yellowtail snapper with Oreos could be the secret ingredient.
No, please. So, no.
Exactly. And they have to make it taste good. That's the deal.
Sure.
It's going to happen right behind Marker 88. Like I said, it is a fundraiser. Which will be great for local charities as well. And the other thing that makes this show unique is that they're going to be cooking, since they're cooking right on the bay, they only have limited amount of cooking utensils.
Wow, you're making it hard on these chefs, I got to tell you. That's Sunday the 13th, and Bobby Stokey is our guest for the Uncorked, the Key Largo and Isla Mirada Food and Wine Festival. In our last 2 minutes, Bobby, we have to race through. So Monday the 14th, what's up at Key Largo Conch House?
Key Largo Conch House, seafood, wine, and art in the garden. They do a great job. They pair local artists with fresh Florida Keys seafood. Really neat event. So I definitely would recommend that.
Tuesday the 16th?
Tuesday the 16th, we have the Progressive Dinner Dine Around. Five courses, five restaurants. Really great.
And a bus takes all of the participants from
bus
restaurant to restaurant.
Yep, restaurant to restaurant. Then you come back in the end and get your car, or they'll help you arrange, get transportation home if you've had too good of a time.
Wednesday the 16th, where do we go?
Again, I would go back to Snappers for Sushi 101. I think that it gives people, lets them know how to make sushi. That's their deal. They're going to teach a class. They did a great job this past year with mozzarella making, so I'm sure this will be a sold-out event.
Wednesday the 16th at Ziggy's and Mad Dogs, an evening with a pasta pantaleo, and Thursday the 17th, your organic event, which is a great addition this year.
Yep, going green on the bay at Snook's Restaurant. Absolutely beautiful, beautiful location. That'll be a great event. Definitely people should check that out.
The Moose Lodge is having fun with a five-course gourmet dinner on the 17th.
Yep, Moose Lodge. It's always interesting because they really have these guys love food, and they put on some amazing events. And I know you're like, a Moose Lodge? Seriously? But they do a great job.
Friday the 18th at Senior Frijoles, the Key Players put on a murder mystery dinner. And Saturday the 19th, the grand finale with the Grand Tasting.
Grand Tasting, yep. And that'll be great fun. You can check us out at FloridaKeysUncorked.com, www.FloridaKeysUncorked.com.
They're also on Facebook at Florida Keys and Key West, on Twitter at The Florida Keys, and on YouTube at Florida Keys TV. So you all are all over the internet. Good luck to you, Mr. Bobby Stokey, for a very successful Uncorked, the Key Largo and Isla Mirada Food and Wine Festival starting Thursday, January 10th.
This is South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM, South Florida's NPR news station. Good afternoon. It's 19 minutes past 1.
Palm Beach Drama Works presents Edward Albee's dark comedy, A Delicate Balance. This Pulitzer Prize-winning play follows a well-to-do suburban family whose life is upended when friends, seized by a nameless terror, come to live with them. This is a rare chance to see Tony Award nominee Maureen Anderman and Carbonell Award winners Angie Radosh and Dennis Cregan in A Delicate Balance. Strictly limited engagement now through January 6th at Palm Beach Drama Works on Clematis Street, West Palm Beach, 561-514-4042 or palmbeachdramaworks.org.
Orchestra Miami presents Amal and the Night Visitors, the classic holiday tale about a young boy who reminds us of the true meaning of Christmas. Saturday, December 22nd, 8 p.m. at the Miami Shores Presbyterian Church. Tickets and information at orchestramiami.org.
Grandstand tickets are now on sale for the 64th Annual Junior Orange Bowl Parade, scheduled for December 30th at 4 p.m. Grand Marshal Ron McGill from Zoo Miami leads local and national marching bands, show horses, youth groups, performers, and floats down historic Miracle Mile in downtown Coral Gables. There's the pre-parade show, which is only available to grandstand ticket holders, with performances by local dance group Hip Hop Kids and the Bay High School Panama City Marching Band. More details at jrorangebowl.org.
This is South Florida Arts Beat on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Hello, I'm Ed Bell. Later on our program, author Bob Keeling talks about his new book, Calling Me Home, Graham Parsons and the Roots of Country Rock. Our arts calendar today features Jody Horn-Leshinsky with enticing Broward County events. Now, our film critic Dan Hudak delivers his top 10 picks for 2012.
What a great year for movies. This list of the top 10 movies of 2012 could easily have 20 entries, and I'd still have room to spare, as there was no shortage of stellar action, heartfelt drama, and thought-provoking storylines to give us a whirlwind of emotions in theaters this year. Yes, we had our disappointments. Prometheus and The Master were confounding, and Lincoln was brilliantly acted but long and dry. But by and large, movies with grand hype notably delivered, including my pick for the number 10 movie of the year, The Avengers. Marvel had been building to this since the first Iron Man was released in 2008, and imagine the billions, yes, billions of dollars that would have been lost if the series failed. Thankfully for audiences, it didn't, and the result culminated in a grand adventure that perfectly balanced its characters and told a story worthy of their unique abilities. The Avengers is now available on video. Changing tone, my number 9 film, The Sessions, is probably also the year's sweetest and most poignant. In the capable hands of John Hawkes and Helen Hunt, this tender story about a severely disabled 38-year-old man who longs to lose his virginity and the sex surrogate who helps him do it resonated with an earnest warmth that many films attempt and few achieve. Expect Oscar noms for both leads, and deservedly so. The Sessions is in theaters now. When Quentin Tarantino burst onto the scene with Reservoir Dogs in 1992, then followed it up with the extremely successful Pulp Fiction 2 years later, the world knew an immensely talented filmmaker was in its midst. His projects since have varied in success, but his latest, Django Unchained, is a superb validation of Tarantino's unique style and voice combined with a great story. Throw in splendid performances from Christoph Waltz, Jamie Foxx, and Leonardo DiCaprio, and you have something truly special. In this scene, bounty hunter Waltz and his protege, an embattled former slave named Django, who's played by Fox, expresses interest in Mandingo, or bare-knuckle slave fighting, something DiCaprio's character is an expert in.
What's your name, boy?
His name is Django Freeman.
Why'd you dig him up?
Well, fortuitous turn of events brought Django and myself together.
I've heard tell about you. I heard you've been telling everybody that Mandingos ain't no damn good, ain't nothing nobody is selling is worth buying. I'm curious. What makes you such a Mandingo expert?
I'm curious what makes you so curious.
What did you say, boy?
Calm down, Butch. No offense given. None taken.
Now, Monsieur Condi, I'd appreciate if you could direct your line of inquiry toward me.
One. You do not have anything to drink. Can I get you a tasty refreshment?
Yes. I'll have a beer.
Wunderbar. Roscoe, a beer for the man with the beard, and I will have a Polynesian pearl diver. Do not spare the rum.
Django Unchained is in theaters Christmas Day. For my number 7 film of 2012, be prepared to be blown away, to be overcome with emotion the same way the millions who've seen Les Miserables on stage have felt for years. Hugh Jackman gives a performance of his career as Jean Valjean, the escaped parolee who's being chased down by Russell Crowe's Inspector Javert, and Anne Hathaway will likely win an Oscar for singing so beautifully as the troubled Fantine. This is a sweeping, grand epic that in the hands of the King's Speech director Tom Hooper is a truly powerful movie-going experience. Les Miserables is in theaters Christmas Day. Extravagant as Les Mis is, no movie this year looked better or told a more gut-wrenching, harrowing story of survival than Life of Pi, which followed a young Indian man's journey while trapped on a lifeboat in the Pacific with a Bengal tiger. After the opening half hour establishes needed context and themes, watch the teenage Pi, wonderfully played by newcomer Suraj Sharma, negotiate both the elements and the tiger is endlessly captivating. Even better are the 3D visuals that look like beautiful works of art. In this scene, Pi writes a note begging for help, puts it in a can, and throws it into the ocean.
My name is Pi Patel. I have been in a shipwreck. I am on a lifeboat alone with the tiger. Please send help.
Thank you. Life of Pi is a visually pleasing, emotionally satisfying film that should be seen in 3D in theaters, so go now as it's nearing the end of its run. Critics have dismissed my number 5 film of 2012, Flight, as being the typical story of alcoholism. But I would submit that not all stories of alcoholism involve a hero dealing with a heavy sense of survivor's guilt and a possible life sentence in prison. They also don't touch on how the hero, played by Denzel Washington, so often helps others in part because he's a good soul who cannot help himself. Washington gives his best performance in years as the troubled alcoholic, and Robert Zemeckis' film is the epitome of what a solid drama highlighted by a standout performance can and should be. Flight is in theaters now. For the most exhilarating ride of 2012, look no further than Looper, which is easily the most imaginative and creative film of the year. The premise follows an assassin in 2044 who murders people sent back in time from 30 years in the future. All is well until someone comes whom he can't kill, the older version of himself. What comes next showcases Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Bruce Willis as different versions of the same character, Emily Blunt in a strong supporting role, and the best original screenplay of the year from writer-director Rian Johnson. If you're looking to have a flat-out great time with a movie and have your mind blown in the process, see Looper when it becomes available on video December 31st. My number 3 film of 2012, The Dark Knight Rises, was a fittingly stellar end to what should rightfully be called the greatest trilogy of all time. Throw in Anne Hathaway as a sultry Catwoman, Tom Hardy as the fierce and imposing Bane, and Michael Caine nearly making us cry as Alfred, and you have a top-notch action movie that's dark and moody, but ultimately inspiring. Here's Bane admonishing his men for bringing Commissioner Gordon to their hideaway. Note the ruthlessness of the dialogue.
Why are you here?
Answer him.
I was asking you.
It's the police commissioner.
And you brought him down here.
We didn't know what to do. We just
thought... You panicked. And your weakness has cost the lives of 3 others.
No, he's alone.
Search him, then I will kill you.
He's dead.
So show me his body.
The water runs to any one of the outflows. We'll never find him.
Follow him.
Follow him.
I did not look forward to any movie this year more than I did this one, and I was not let down in the least. The Dark Knight Rises is now available on video. In a year full of heartbreaking plot lines, my number 2 film, Amour, is the only film that made me cry, and I'm not a crier. The tender, sweet story of an elderly couple that struggles to maintain their dignity after one of them becomes ill feels strikingly, alarmingly real, to the point that you hope it doesn't happen to you, but at the same time, you should only be so lucky to have a partner who will love and care for you as much as what's seen here. Cynics may call it a depressing movie about old people dying, but I call it a brilliantly acted, wonderfully told love story about a happily married couple that loves one another until the very end. Amour is in limited release now and opens in Miami January 25th. I'll never forget the lump in my throat that I felt during the last half hour of the best film of 2012, director star Ben Affleck's Argo. Going in, I knew about the Iran hostage, but did not know about the 6 who escaped and took refuge at the Canadian embassy, and I was glad I didn't, as the drama is even more palpable when you don't know how it ends. John Goodman and Alan Arkin are superb in comic relief roles as Hollywood types who help Affleck's CIA agent stage a fake movie in an effort to extract the hostages, and kudos to editor William Goldenberg for slowly building the tension until we're really swept away in the finale. This is great, great filmmaking, and as a result, a relatively easy choice for the best film of the year. Argo is in theaters now. For South Florida Arts Beat, I'm Dan Hudak.
Chairman of the Florida Film Critics Circle, Dan Hudak is a nationally syndicated film critic. You can visit him online at hudakonhollywood.com. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat will continue right after these messages.
The time is 1:30, and it's South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN, 91.5 WKWM, South Florida's NPR news station. Great to have you along. The Technion Israel Institute of Technology is often described as the engine that drives Israel's high-tech economy. Technion graduates helped develop the Iron Dome defense system and many other life-saving technologies. Learn more at ats.org.
North Broward Preparatory School hosts an open house on January 27th at 2 p.m. North Broward Preparatory School offers an enriched curriculum that fosters critical and creative thinking supported by innovative educational technology. Students experience a personalized approach that enables them to succeed in school, college, and beyond. North Broward Preparatory, you can be part of an extraordinary community. Reservations at 954-247-0179 or npbs.org.
It's South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Later on the program, Jody Horn-Lashinsky, interim director of the Broward Cultural Division, checks in with her arts calendar. You might not have heard of the Central Florida-bred rock and folk musician, but he brought a country rock influence to the Byrds and even the Rolling Stones. The Emmy Award-winning reporter and author Bob Keeley writes about singer, songwriter, and guitarist Graham Parsons and the roots of country rock in his new book, Calling Me Home.
In South Carolina.
Bob Keeling, welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat.
Pleasure to be here, Ed. Thanks so much for having me.
Your latest book, Calling Me Home, concerns the great musician Graham Parsons and the roots of country rock. Now, how did you settle on Graham Parsons? Why is he so special?
Because I found that Graham was a thread to talk about so many interesting and vastly underreported music scenes in the South, but most specifically here in the state of Florida, whether it's Coconut Grove, whether it's the teen centers along I-4, or whether it's where Graham went to school at the exclusive Bowles School in Jacksonville. There was so much compelling material there.
Well, on that topic, tell us about the prolific Florida Youth Centers scene. So many national and international musicians came out of Central Florida and that scene.
And every time I talk about it, people's eyes just get wider and wider because they have no idea that this really was like a nurturing ground, especially along I-4, but certainly in South Florida, certainly in North Florida. But I focused in on Central Florida because that's where Graham grew up and spent many of his formative years in these garage bands. And what these places would do is it would give people like Graham, like Dwayne and Greg Allman, like Tom Petty, like Don Felder and Bernie Leadon, who were very early members of the Eagles, all of these different and important musicians played these teen centers up and down the peninsula. And what that did was it gave them the opportunity to play, you might say somewhat professionally. They were getting paid to play at 14, 15 years old. Graham's parents gave him a little tour bus for his garage band, the Legends, before he even knew how to drive. So Jim Stafford, who was in the band with him, told me about, you know, having to drive the tour bus, even though it belonged to Graham, because Graham wasn't old enough to drive. But I think that's why so many of these guys broke out so early and were able to really capture the spotlight so quickly and have this self-assured nature on stage and as songwriters, because they'd been doing it for so long already, even when they were only 18, 19, 20, and 21 years old.
Well, Graham Parsons had some wonderful parents, very generous, but it was a difficult life for him growing up. Tell us why.
Well, in Graham's family, specifically on his mother's side of the family, in fact, both his parents, but his grandfather on his mother's side was John Snively, this vastly wealthy citrus magnate here in Florida. So Graham came from a significant amount of wealth on his mom's side, but there was also a family history of addiction sort of wound within their DNA. And you know what? That type of addiction knows no economic strata, as we well know, and money doesn't buy happiness. So while Graham was afforded many luxuries in his youth, he also had two parents who were severely addicted to alcohol, and they left him far too early because of that. So those folks who think on the surface, oh, Graham Parsons, well, he had it so easy because he came from money, really don't know the whole story. And that family history of melancholy and depression and addiction also took its toll on him later in life. And you really can't write a book about Graham Parsons without giving that a thorough explanation and exploration.
Well, also let us know about his love of American folk music, which kind of got him started, I guess, and sent him up to New York.
Yeah, that's another really interesting part of Graham's career that people don't know a whole lot about. When Graham was just a young teen, he started playing professionally in a quartet out of all places, South Carolina, called the Shilohs. And you have to remember that these folk artists in general, guys like the Journeymen with John Phillips and Scott McKenzie and Dick Wiseman, were down here in the South touring in the early 60s, often with African-American acts. So it was a thing of courage to go out and play these types of concerts when you'd go through Mississippi and Alabama and places where they didn't particularly like seeing integrated tours when the South was still very segregated. But Graham got into that music a great deal and admired especially the Journeymen with John Phillips and Scott McKenzie. When he was still a junior in high school at the Bowles School, his group, the Shilohs, went up and spent the summer in Greenwich Village and actually crashed on John Phillips' floor of his apartment with he and his wife Michelle when John was writing all of the great songs that he would later do in the next couple of years with the Mamas and the Papas. But at the time, John was still coming out of his own folk music phase. Graham also had his own folk music radio show at the Bowles School in Jacksonville. So that was really his entree to professional music, as were so many other musicians coming of age in the early 60s before the Beatles came along. And Graham definitely rode that wave into professional music, getting paid to play and learning how to be professional performing. That was his channel, was through folk music.
Wow, I wonder if there is an air check in existence of his work on that Jacksonville radio station.
Well, I can tell you, Ed, I would love to hear that, but I have heard a great live recording of Graham and the Shilohs at this little tiny club that his parents opened for him in Winter Haven called the Dairy Down, which was another one of these youth centers, and it's from December 20th, 1964, and it was recorded off the radio, and it's just killer. I mean, these guys had real talent, and in fact, in New York, Albert Grossman, Bob Dylan's agent, heard them and was willing to sign them until he found out they were just a bunch of juniors in high school and sent them back and said, "You're wasting my time, you guys.
Shucks.
Come back when you're old enough."
Wow. Now, up there in New York, he met the great Coconut Grove folky, Fred Neil, and that established a connection. And then he visited Fred over the following few years in Coconut Grove. Tell us about the Coconut Grove connection.
Yeah, that's a really important and another connection in Graham's career that isn't all that well known. It's later on in Graham's career, after he's with his group, the International Submarine Band, and Graham makes his first record, and it's really considered one of the archetypical country rock records, and he's got a couple of great songs in there, like Luxury Liner is a good one, Blue Eyes. So here he is, 18, 19 years old, and he's already writing very sophisticated, polished songs. But he meets Chris Hillman from the Byrds in a bank line in Beverly Hills, and he sees that opportunity, and they stay in touch. Graham goes down to Coconut Grove and hooks up with Fred Neil, spends a lot of time jamming down there. And during his time in South Florida and on the way back to L.A., he writes two classic songs, Hickory Wind and also 100 years from now that Graham has in his back pocket and he takes with him when the Byrds sign him to be a sideman in their band to replace Gene Clark and David Crosby, who both left. But here is Graham at 21 years old, so self-assured. He's got two great songs with him to put on Sweetheart of the Rodeo. And the genesis of both of those songs were being down in South Florida, hanging out with Fred Neil, who Graham admired a great deal. You know, even though Fred was a folkie, he still had this frame of mind that, look, I don't want to be pigeonholed. I just want to be able to play my music, not have to worry about commercialism and singles and all that. And Graham sort of used that as his template when he started to mix this. You know, he had this blending of country and rock music. He didn't care if it wasn't commercially viable at the time. He knew that wave was coming. That's one of the reasons why Graham's such a visionary, because he was so far ahead of his time.
Now, in our remaining few minutes with Bob Keeling, the author of Calling Me Home, Grand Parsons, and the Roots of Country Rock, Graham met Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones in the late 60s and hung with him throughout the early 70s and perhaps influenced the Stones' music?
Yeah, there's no question that Graham influenced the Stones, really pointed them in their country direction for records like Let It Bleed, and he was also there when they made their classic recording, their classic record Exile on Main Street in the south of France. In fact, they thought so much of him that they let him record Wild Horses with the Flying Burrito Brothers. So Graham was a big influence on Keith Richards. In fact, in his book Life, Keith even said, "The two purest musicians I ever knew were John Lennon and Graham Parsons." So that's pretty heady company indeed.
So
Graham, definitely an influence.
So, unfortunately, we've run out of time. So much more to talk about with Mr. Bob Keeling, author of Calling Me Home, Graham Parsons, and the Roots of Country Rock. It's a wonderful read. You'll learn about Graham launching Emmylou Harris's career and so much more. Should you like to pick up a copy, it's available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And Bob is available on Facebook at Calling Me Home. And you can always go to University Press of Florida at upf.com. Bob Keeling, it's been a pleasure having you back on South Florida Arts Beat. And I really look forward to your next publication.
All right, Ed. Well, thank you so much. And as always, I appreciate being here and just look forward to the next one.
Once again, Calling Me Home, Graham Parsons and the Roots of Country Rock by author Bob Keeling is available from University Press of Florida at upf.com, Amazon, or Barnes & Noble. You can reach Bob Keeling at his Facebook site at Calling Me Home. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat will continue here on 91.3 WLRN in just a moment.
Kids come.
You're listening to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN. Good afternoon. The disease of addiction doesn't discriminate based on age or status. Comprehensive addiction treatment and recovery are offered for older adults and baby boomers at Hanley Center, 855-718-2233. Hanley Center, recovery for life.
Thrill is gone.
For more than half a century, B.B. King has defined the blues for a worldwide audience. Since he started recording in the 1940s, he has released more than 50 albums, most of which are now considered classics. The Broward Center presents B.B. King in concert for one night only, New Year's Eve at 9 p.m. You can see him live and hear one of the greatest living guitarists at the Broward Center. Tickets at browardcenter.org or 954-462-0222.
And here's our South Florida Arts Beat entertainment calendar. And today we welcome back Jody Horn-Leschinski, Interim Director of the Broward Cultural Division. Great to have you back with us, Jody.
Well, thanks, Ed. It's always wonderful to be on your show.
Now, I know there's so much going on in Broward County. Where do we start?
Oh, well, let's start with holidays, since those are right upon us, aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
For the holidays, in the arts and cultural world, there's so many ways that you can share the spirit of gift-giving while supporting the local economy. And the not-for-profit cultural organizations are supported when we purchase local culture. and you also contribute to a developing creative industry. In Broward County, this industry has a $230 million economic impact. By giving the gift of an entrance ticket to see, for example, the most famous choir in the world whose voices have been pleasing audiences for six centuries, the Vienna Boy Choir, you will be supporting an industry that generates $22 million in local and state government revenue.
Wow.
Taking a drive into Fort Lauderdale for an evening out might begin with a dinner, followed by an uplifting experience of an acclaimed classical performance, or perhaps an impressive local talent. Broward County audience spending totaled $127 million in 2010. For the organizations presenting the performance, stage props have been purchased or ordered, staff has been hired, lighting and sound, perhaps they were farmed out, and advertising was purchased, supplies for costumes, internet, and administration have all been implemented. In 2010, this not-for-profit arts and culture spending totaled $103 million in Broward County. So, just an example, if you visit Stranahan House, guests are transported back to a Victorian Christmas, and then you may wish to end this cultural visit with a ride down the New River to see the holiday lights on the majestic Fort Lauderdale homes. Of course, those gas for the boat and salary for the captain, and that will be added into our local economy as well. Other gift-giving ideas include shopping at one of the many cultural organizations in Broward County that sell local arts and crafts. Galleries at ArtServe, Bonnet House, and Butterfly World take the idea of gift shop way beyond itself with unique gift ideas that reflect the heart and the art of Broward County. It's a great way to share secrets about Broward with your out-of-town family and friends. In early 2013, Business for the Arts of Broward will launch Power to Give Broward, a new online fundraising platform to support arts and cultural projects in Broward County. The site will offer a unique way for individuals and corporations to make donations to fund artistic projects of not-for-profit cultural organizations. Organizations will list needs for specific projects, for example, instruments for children in a youth orchestra or costumes for an upcoming theater production, and then people visiting the site can then pick a need that interests them and they can make a donation, and no donation is too small. This project has been made possible with a $75,000 investment from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation as part of its Knight Arts Challenge, and a $25,000 investment from Broward County's Cultural Division. Power to Give will be open to Broward-based cultural organizations who have been recommended for funding through the Broward Cultural Council over the past 5 years. They have to be a 501c3 not-for-profit and also have a solicitation license from the state of Florida. Organizations can submit projects in need of funding of up to $10,000, and they will have 90 days to reach their fundraising goal. And the beauty of this is if they don't reach their goal, they still get whatever they post.
Oh, that's nice.
It is. It's a good feature of this Power to Give program. We're not the only place in the world that has this. It started in North Carolina, and it's also in Miami-Dade, and it's also in Texas, a few other places as well. So when you go to the Power to Give website, you will see all the other communities that are doing this particular online fundraising. Broward Cultural Division, ArtServe, and the Nonprofit Finance Fund invites you to a seminar called Linking Money to Mission, Interpreting Financial Statements in January, January 31st to be exact. It's a full-day workshop at ArtServe in Fort Lauderdale, and they will use real-life examples and engage participants in the fundamentals of not-for-profit finance in order to better equip not-for-profit leaders and managers to interpret financial statements and assess their organization's fiscal health, and to help nonprofits develop and use financial information to make better and often difficult decisions, to better communicate this information to stakeholders, and to build a culture of analysis, planning, and management that reinforces both mission and organizational strength. Seating is limited, so you need to RSVP by visiting the Broward County Cultural Division website at broward.org/arts. Something very exciting is that Broward County recently added our entire public artworks into the national database that's called Public Art Archive. The United States is home to some of the most extraordinary public art in the world, And for many, public art is not only a part of a city or a regional identity, it often serves as a major vehicle for engaging local citizens and visitors through art. And within the pages of the public art archives, you will find interesting and beautiful images and extensive descriptions of public art from across the country. The Public Art Archive, which is a new project of the Western State Arts Federation, or WESTAF, is a sophisticated, searchable database of public art throughout the United States. And the archive makes public art and its processes more accessible to the public, displaying images of each piece alongside an extensive description, including audio and video, whenever it's available. So this weekend, there's a lot coming up, Ed.
And great.
We can keep you busy. Busy, busy, busy. The Arts Ballet Theater of Florida presents The Nutcracker this Saturday and Sunday at Parker Playhouse. Snowflakes, Sugar Plums, Naughty Little Boys, and Magical Dolls, The Charm of the Holidays, is back this year as Arts Ballet Theater of Florida presents the return of the ballet classic The Nutcracker. The engaging choreography, from the harrowing battle scene to the enchanting Kingdom of the Sweets, guaranteed to entertain any age. And this popular ballet is a wonderful introduction to ballet for very young audiences. Coral Springs Center for the Arts welcomes the Kosher Comedy Hour on Saturday. In the tradition of Catskills on Broadway comes an exciting new multimedia comedy show with music starring three of today's funniest Jewish comedians, Peter Fogel, Sharon Daniels, and Stu Moss. They have appeared on more than 20 major shows, including The Tonight Show, Oprah, Evening at the Improv, and more. Spend an evening with the Kosher Comedy Hour and you'll laugh till you plat. The Museum of Discovery and Science invites the family to celebrate the last weeks of the amazing exhibition Geckos, Tales to Towpads, by Catching Bugs, Camouflaging Yourself, Investigating Sticky Science, and Enjoying Games and Crafts, through December 27th. The Broward Center for the Performing Arts welcomes Broadway Across America's production of Sister Act, now through December 30th. Sister Act is Broadway's musical comedy smash. The New York Post calls it ridiculously funny. And it's featuring original music from 8-time Oscar winner Alan Menken, who also did Beauty and the Beast, The Little Mermaid, and Little Shop of Horrors. Sister Act tells the story of Dolores Van Cartier, a wannabe diva whose life takes a surprising turn when she witnesses a crime and the cops hide her out in the last place anyone would think to look, a convent. Under the suspicious watch of Mother Superior, Dolores helps her fellow sisters find their voices as she unexpectedly discovers her own. Now through December 31st, the Broward Stage Door Theater presents Showboat. The work tells a love story between a seductive gambler and the daughter of a showboat captain who runs a sailing casino on the Mississippi. Jerome Kern's lovely melodies and Hammerstein's incisive lyrics have long endured the success of songs like Old Man River, Only Make Believe, and Bill, which today belong as much to the American vernacular as they do to stage folklore. Now through January 31st, the Museum of Discovery and Science and AutoNation IMAX Theater presents The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey, an IMAX 3D experience. The Girl Choir of South Florida has assembled its lyrics choir, chamber singers, and concert choir to present a performance of What Sweeter Music, a winter holiday concert, tonight at 8 p.m. The concert will be held at All Saints Episcopal Church in Fort Lauderdale. On Saturday, the Museum of Art Fort Lauderdale presents a kids' movie, The Shark Riddle. The Shark Riddle is a half-hour film for the whole family. Solve a mysterious riddle about shark teeth. Meet a raucous group of singing sea lions, hear a shark lullaby, and experience the underwater game show, Are You a Shark? The event is at 11 a.m. and free to the public. If you would like more detailed cultural event information, please visit artscalendar.com, South Florida's guide to art and culture. Never miss a thing. Get there.
Always with great event suggestions for your consideration, that's Jody Horn-Leshinsky, Interim Director of the Broward Cultural Division. Jody, thanks for all of that information.
Thank you, and happy holidays to you and all your listeners.
Thank you. Happy holidays. And may I add, local music greats Dana Paul, Wendy Peterson, Nikki Yarling, Ed Kaye, Jim Gaisier, Josh Allen, and Nomar Negroni are in a free holiday concert tonight in West Palm Beach at 8 p.m. The location is where Clematis meets the Intracoastal Waterway. They'll be performing an all-star, all-holiday concert. Once again tonight at 8 o'clock, it's free and an absolutely beautiful venue where Clematis meets the Intracoastal Waterway in West Palm Beach. Also, South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center wants to help you get a healthy start to your new year. They'll offer a special week of one-hour classes presented for free at the South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center. For more info, call 786-573-5319. Hip-hop dance, cardio box kicking, African dance, belly dance, yoga. Call 786-573-5319. And we'll rebroadcast South Florida Arts Beat tonight and every Friday night at 7 o'clock on our WLRN Extra HD channel. You can tune in on your HD radio or go to our website at WLRN.org for more information. And that's today's edition of South Florida Arts Beat. We hope you enjoyed the show. Adrian Kennedy is our executive producer. I'm Ed Bell, producer and host. Our theme was composed by Mike Levine and performed by Mike and Sam Levine. Special thanks to our technical director today, Andy Wagner, and our contributors, Dan Hudak and Jody Horn-Leschinski. Please call us with your comments at 305-995-2258. You can fax us your event information to 305-995-2221 or email it to us at info@WLRN.org. We'd like to hear from you. Monday at 1 o'clock, Topical Currents with host Joseph Cooper, Monday at 1. Well, we wish you and yours a great weekend and happy holidays. And as always, please keep your dial set right here to 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Until next time, this is Ed Bell saying bye-bye. Enjoy.